As for me, give me liberty! Oh, give me death!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence and their global partners are destroying the deep state criminal power structure that has ruled over our planet for hundreds of years.
We are free with the God-given rights, and we shall not yield that right to any power on earth.
Hi, I'm Scott McKay. The world is at, and I am your host on The Tipping Point. On Revolution Radio, where every Monday from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, we bring you the latest in this ensuing takedown of this global criminal empire.
That's an image of strength.
You'll get the raw hard truth here on The Tipping Point. So come join us Mondays, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, in Studio B at revolution.radio.
This is the People's War. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it, then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Warning! Warning!
We've got to stop them! They're going to kill us all!
See how the trouble you've started?
Be they the government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone or human being.
Time when the operation of the machine becomes so obvious. Makes you so sick at heart that you can't take part. You can't even passively take part. And you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop. And you've got to win the day to the people who run it, to the people who own it. That unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio station, throwing ourselves upon the gears of the machine. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
You called down the thunder, well now you've got it.
Rest, you tell them I'm coming, and hell's coming with me, you hear? Hell's coming with me!
Revolution Radio!
Mini Ice Age Conversations Podcast. It's about observing cycles, sharing insights, and solving problems together by combining historical, climate, food, and economic data so you can make informed decisions as we shift into a new era. Here's what was. This is what's coming. Our world is never going back to 2019. So what would the new era look like? And most importantly, what is immediate that will affect the pocketbook and the outlook into next year so we can all get ready? Thank you for joining. I'm your host, David Dubine.
Right along here with Ransom Godwin every Thursday night, 10 p.m. to midnight. Thank you for joining us. Another week of changes, and what a week it has been. Food price will be going up. Now, I just wanted to start the hour, and I'm just going to let Ransom take it, you know, after I make a comment here. But you know, I follow the grains a lot, and I try to make sense of this 400-year cycle, shifting the cloud cells and jet streams to reduce food production, and then all the changes we're seeing currently happening at this moment in our world are reflective in following absolutely to the T the same timeline of change expected naturally. And now, you know, we see what all these events are here. Now, Ukraine's going to stop the grain corridor. See, that was just an open ocean thing, or I should say a Black Sea, but still it's quite a vast amount of open water there. So as it was explained to me, I read Al Jazeera, which they have a decent section through all the different continents on the latest news. And then I scrape through RT also because I like to see both perspectives. And I jump around, I go like Japan Times, Bangkok Times, these kind of things, see what's going on in Asia and take a look at the news. So I have just about 10 of those that I'll go through, and I look at BBC and just see what they have to say, this sort of thing. Straits Times as well, that's a good read down for Hong Kong. But the way it's explained out on the rest of the media is that with the grain corridor closing, with a functional Odessa port area, it's a huge area for loading grains. If that was functional, they were going to try to send grain ships in there with, I guess, American escort destroyers or whatever that would be to escort those grain ships in. And it was going to become a standoff, very much like the Cuban Missile Crisis, on purpose. They say you're going to close the grain corridor. Then we're going to send ships in, and we're going to escort them to go through, and we're going to go pick up the grain and bring it out of there, Russia. You have not. So then they just completely blew everything to smithereens. So that wouldn't happen. Now, if they try to run a grain ship in where there's no possible anywhere on that part of the sea to load grains, then everybody will see it's a farce. Well, they were trying to kick it up another notch and level today. So you can see where that was going to go. Russia was like two steps ahead of where they were going to try to take it by forcing boats through there with military escort. So, Ransom, you can see how each week is moving along in the distractions to cover for higher food prices. And now we're seeing every excuse for higher food prices thrown and stick to the wall. It's unbelievable. About every other article is about food now and crop losses because of extremes in the climate and the war. I don't know. You can see where do you see it funneling from this point? And Ransom, thanks for joining tonight.
Well, this is kind of what we predicted over the winter, which is funny because I went through the headlines today and I just saw all kinds of things that we talked about and predicted being around this summer. And they're trying to trigger this. You know, I've been paying real close attention to this because although I believe it's a theater of war, meaning that everything's being directed in certain ways to look and portray certain things that's going on that might not actually be the way it is on the ground. I'm just watching this theater. And so what I'm seeing is every little country, like especially me, I was talking about this shatterbelt area there, all the way from the Ukraine on both sides, like Belarus, Romania, all the way up through the little Slavic countries into, to where you get by Germany and everything, all that whole area. It's the easiest place to manipulate in Europe because it's the clash of cultures where, you know, and they're doing that. Weirdly, the same thing is happening in India, China, South America, and here in the United States. It's the divide and conquer aspect of the New World Order, where they make sure that little groups have reasons to not like each other. So it could be from anything from speaking the same language to believing in the same religion, et cetera, et cetera. But what they do is they fire up everybody. So, you know, this Ukraine-Russia thing is going, obviously been spreading into the surrounding area with blowing up the bridge, blowing up the pipeline. There's been so many indicators that they are not going to back off of a World War III scenario. And it's just a repeat. They're literally trying to, you know, redesign the map and make new factions. And that being only the real one faction. But what they're going to do to really freak everyone out, as you see right here, wheat prices jump higher as Ukraine threatens retaliation against ships going to Russian ports. And with all of the things that we were talking about all the way into last year and the year before, you know, surrounding the nuke plants, surrounding, you know, just the fact that that's like a bread belt area, and what an area if you were going to pick an area to have destabilization and war to start starving people. And this is where you would trigger the dominoes to start making it fall to disrupt the entire world's supply of food. And it starts with shipping lanes. You can't, you know, it's already where they're avoiding it like the plague in the sky. And now with so much stuff going on in the water in the Black Sea and the Baltic Sea, and then soon it's going to be the Atlantic and the North Seas. You could just see this spreading around. And then on the other side, don't forget, we also often have nuclear Russian subs just bouncing off our coast on the side. And remember that Russia has a better Navy than we do. A lot of people forget that their Navy is more technologically advanced than ours. They have bigger subs. They go deeper. They can stay under longer, and they have bigger boom boom sticks that they can launch out right on the coast. So first, we're going to get into the fighting of the economy, where everybody's taking sides, and you can see that play out with the Brinks and also with the shipment of food here. You're going to see this increasingly being partially the reason, and this is something that we said they were going to use war and, you know, disease, if you remember the last couple of years, we'll just say it that way, war and disease to manipulate the food Just like Kissinger wants to do, use food as a weapon. That's exactly what's going on. And wait till this winter. Let's do some more predicting. I predict this winter you're going to have a bunch of really cold Germans, really cold Spaniards, really cold everybody, because they're not going to be getting any energy from then. And think about it. Somebody, maybe the United States, maybe Ukraine, who knows, blew up the Nord Stream pipeline there, which was a major supplier of energy, which makes things run, which allows people to be warm and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So you can see the worldwide economy collapsing and the dominoes falling. And we're about to start seeing triggers happening everywhere. And what I suspect is you're going to see some really radical politics in all of the Brinks nations as Western powers try to sabotage and stop this from happening. But it's just widespread. And speaking of things that we predicted, and I don't know if you want to go down the AI route and then we'll deal with the fake worldwide roasting, you know, hottest planet ever and all of this garbage that they've been pushing out for the past week because of a minor heat wave. That's not unlike every heat wave that's kind of rolled through the South and the Southwest before. There's nothing alike. Like they're saying, oh, my God, there's a record here. But they don't tell you that 20 miles away, it's like, you know, 15 degrees cooler and it's nowhere near a record. And actually, I'll show you guys a chart here in a minute. But let's get into the AI first. Everywhere is telling you, just like I said, the complete track and tracing of human beings. And you sent me an article that was talking about the palm reading or the veins. I think it was the veins. But here, let's go down this rabbit hole here. CEO of WorldCoin says something like World ID will eventually exist.
Ransom, are you there?
Yeah.
Okay, keep going. Yeah, I was going to respond to that there, that there were 100 million bison across the United States in 1650, right at the height of the Little Ice Age.
You're not broadcasting, I don't think. Okay, yeah, you are. Okay. It was big delay, sorry.
Yeah, but 100 million bison across the United States. Think about that just for a minute. In 1650, in the height of the Little Ice Age, when the rivers across England would freeze, especially the Thames River in London. Like they haven't seen that in centuries, right? Maybe once or twice a century, but it was every year for the Little Ice Age. And they were trying to demonize cows now in our cattle industry, but there were hundreds of millions of these animals around. Think about the animal life and the size of it 400 years ago across the planet. Like how much methane was released? We reduced the amount of methane released across the planet by wiping out the animals and increasing the human population, putting cities and, you know, what we've done. Like how many bison are there today? Oh, there's like 7 somewhere in a national park. Whoop-de-doo. Compared to 100 million, and then look at, you know, all the other countries as well, like the amount of vast animal life that was putting so much more methane into the atmosphere. And then they'll try to, you know, they've been moving chemicals, so it was chlorofluorocarbons, and then, you know, it was CO2, but that's not scary enough, and now it has to be something, you know, jump in. Oh, no, that can't even be a gas anymore, nitrogen. It has to be a pelletized form of nitrogen that's now something, but nitrogen's 78% of our atmosphere. So everywhere you look is just ridiculousness with the heat. They missed the whole 1930s Dust Bowl era, early beginning of the 1900s, really hot then as well. Tony Heller doing a great job putting all this together too. But driving wedges between people across the world based on what you think, It's more polarizing now to make you wait, make you think, so you do divide further. It's insidious in the media how it's done. But redesigning the map. See, I'm a fan of looking at the old maps, like pre-World War II maps, say middle of the 1800s, 1850, 1860 maps, and then go back early 1800s, 1810, 1815. And then they start to get really interesting in the 1600s. The maps.
But if you look in the last 120 years, you see how these maps changed. After World War I and the armistice, it changed greatly. And then after World War II, wow, it was even a larger change. Everything got consolidated. So if you look back at these other maps, yeah, there was kings and there was, you know, fiefdoms and different types of empires that had claimed area, the Turkish Ottoman Empire, you know, that was a pretty big area. But that all got broken up after World War I into like a fragmenting of hundreds of countries. But I do believe that this, what we're seeing now, is going to redesign everything into major giant areas again, because then they can restart the debt economy and debt system once again. But where's it going to set up? And see, that's something to look at in a whole different way. So the old system, the old debt is us. That was the West. Borrow the money, start the factory, borrow the money, get the house, borrow the money. Because every time you borrow money, you then can create new money off of that debt. So why do you think there's so much here? But now it's run its course where no more new debt can be issued. So the system has become kind of stagnant. You have to reset it up in a different way, in a different set of the world. So again, when you're looking at longevity of systems, lifetimes, now you look at fiat currencies, there's been about, 2,400 fiat currencies over the last 1,000 years that have disappeared. None of them have lasted. And I didn't say that wrong. I said 2,400 approximately different fiat currencies across the planet in the last 1,000 years have been used as a reserve currency or some sort of currency for a country in a region and gone to zero, never to be seen again. Kind of like all these junk coins in the beginning of 2017. So we're just at the end of another one to be replaced. Now see, that debt has run out. But in a contraction, there can also be money made and then that money taken over to a new area. So, Ransom, I was trying to send you that Deagle map when something happened and I got and the call dropped and I had to reconnect everything. There's a Deagle map I want to send you of the increases, but it's visual. It has red arrows down, green arrows to the side, or green arrows up. And when you see it, you're like, oh, you can see where the whole debt system is being released to. So let me try that again. Let me see if I can send you this thing here. So Ransom, take it away. I'm going to find you right here a little something, and I hope you can share the screen. So let me try to send that to you.
Yeah. Okay.
Because Deagle, you know what I mean? Deagle. Once you see it, you're going to be shocked.
No. I didn't see nothing.
Oh, I'm trying to find it here. I got a lot of images that I've grabbed.
See,
so think about the Deagle numbers. Are there increases in some countries and others not? See, that's the whole thing to be asked. Why not? Where is all the increasing or stabilized population exists? Well, it's in all these underdeveloped nations that need new financing, new infrastructure, new everything to get their economies running up to an American standard of life, which should happen during this next fourth turning here. But looking at how areas are being made off limits or unsafe, you know. So Ransom, take it away while I find you this image here. And once you'll hear it go blop, blop in your box. But for right now.
No, it seems kind of, really simplistic when you look at the countries and their populations and who is how old in which countries, because the entire Western world is basically their median ages are old. We're old and we don't have that many children in the Western world. So there's a lot of sterility. But besides that, just with civilization, the way it unfolded and people started enjoying middle class wealth, they started putting more interest and time and money into less children so that they could have supposedly a better life. Meanwhile, in the third world countries, they have a lot of children and they don't have a long life expectancy because of various reasons. So it makes sense that the elite would use them up. And I'm going to say use them up because that's what it is. And move them all. Basically, the major parts of the workforces are leaving those nations, and the medium age of third world nations is usually between 18 and 25. And those are the workers, and those are the people that are the most also fertile because they might not have taken part in some Western programs that may have lowered fertility. And I'm not going to get into that, but I'm sure people know what I'm talking about. So we're getting into, like I said, we're in the future here. We skip to the future. People don't see it yet. Okay, here we go. I got some pictures. But we're skipping over to what that I mean, I predicted. If you look at the front page of Drudge, they're now bragging, you know, that AI is going to be writing the news, something I've been saying for years already, that that's happening. And they're writing speeches and et cetera, et cetera. People don't realize the level of which AI has now infiltrated their life. And it's in a, we'll get into that in a minute. And it's going to, a lot of people think they're skipping out on it, but, from the articles I'm looking at, the biometric state, the technology that they have behind biometrics, you are not going to skip out of their system. It's just, numerically, physically, and, it's just impossible. You're not going to be able to. So here's these, pictures that you sent me here.
Traveling without a passport, are you able to do that? Yeah, you know, that one image there is of what would appear to be a toroid field as you go through the block wall, which is going to be somewhere around October of 2024, maybe the 23rd or 24th of October. But that other image there is of the Deagle map. Like we can, like the Deagle forecasts were always just these giant spreadsheets of information. Well, somebody put it together now with arrows rising, arrows to the side, or arrows going up, depending on declines, inclines. Declines are red, increases are green, arrow up. So then it gives you a visual spectrum of where all of this new money from the West that's going to collapse into whatever form it will take is all going to be shifted to the green arrows. So from the red arrows to the green arrows is basically what you want to read. So all the money from the West, which is all those red arrows, is all going to be somehow taken and redistributed and removed down to where all the green arrows are to start that cycle of the next 80 years, which will bring that area that is that you're seeing on the green now to the American standard of life, as the ones in red will reduce down to the African standard of life.
I don't know if it's dawned on you that we showed this map last week in the prediction of the nuclear war and where the warheads would hit. You see all those red arrows? That's the places that they showed would be destroyed in a nuclear attack. And just like I said, if you look at those areas in Russia, only the Russian cities are going to disappear, not the millions and millions of acres of you know, pine forest that supplies the world with oxygen. You see those big old giant green arrows there. And that's exactly what I said. They wouldn't destroy that. What they're going to destroy is what's perceived of as the Western world of specific kinds of people. And you can see on this map that that's directly related. Now you could take another map and show the most heavily medicated people of the world. And guess what? It's also where all those red areas are at. And you could take another map and look at the declining population of certain countries. And guess what? It's going to be on those red arrows. And the same thing on all of these things. The rise in populations are happening where those green arrows are at. You could correlate almost all of the maps. And then when you start seeing this overwhelming web pattern, it gets into what I was talking about. This whole thing is completely driven, planned out, and they're ready for the next phase of it. And they're bragging about the technologies that they're going to use to catalog the people of the world to initiate this transformation of wealth here and the die-off of basically the Western world. So let's see here. Here's this article right here. This is now keep in mind that, you know, you have all these people that think that they're going to be a prepper and they're going to hide and they're going to stay out of the system and, you know, get off grid, blah, blah, blah. This shows you the level of where we're at right here. New home video doorbell has social media powered facial recognition, meaning that the wave of the future is going to have all these Ring doorbells and CCTV cams, and everywhere is going to be wired together with the facial recognition programs, not to mention the programs that can tell you apart with your gait, how you walk. Here's another one. Amazon rolling out new payment tech at Whole Foods stores. And all you have to do is wave your palm across it. Amazon announced Thursday it's rolling out its pay by palm services in Whole Foods market stores across the country, making it possible for customers to use their palms for purchase without a wallet or a phone. Here's this one that you sent me. Companies want to scan your veins to be your access to stores, offices, hospitals, stadiums, and more. Over in Japan, they're about to deploy a pre-crime style behavior detection technology that uses facial recognition and some of those other technologies that I've been talking about for years. Here's another one. Google test AI tool that's able to write news articles. Guess what? That's old news. That's big time old news, because I've been talking about it for a long time. So you can see that the inputs in the Western world now are in complete control of the psychology of everyone. And it's a complete brainwashing thing. So it's the end of the nuclear family over here, the end of wholesome human behavior, like growing your own food, living on your own private property, living in the woods, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. All of the things of the human domain are about to be told to people of the Western world that you can't do that, that you're harming the planet. It's all your fault. It's, you know, the planet's burning up and it's because of you. Meanwhile, they're dangling the carrot in front of the horse, so to speak, meaning the third world country, with all the promises of free goods and free services. Look at us in the Western world. We got welfare. We got help. We'll give you money when you get here. There's jobs, et cetera, et cetera. But it's one big hoax. It's a lie. They're shutting off the energy in those places that they're directing all the people to go to. And when you start realizing that the dead zones are the areas on, let me bring that map that you gave me back up, because this is a perfect map. So all of these red areas, well, that's the nuclear targets if we have a nuke war. That's the areas of infertile local populations that have a low replacement population, meaning they only had one or maybe two children. So the population rate didn't go up, because you have to have at least three children for population growth per family. Because if you only have two, you're just replacing yourself and your mate. And all of these people, they're willing to have lots of children. They've had the promise of different kind of women, of better economies, free food, free rent, free everything. And so they're willing to move there. Meanwhile, the big green arrows, that's the wealth. The inherited wealth and the GDP kind of wealth that's earned from your country having a good economy, that's all leaving. That's going into those areas that the people are leaving. Isn't that amazing how they're moving the massive populations to the old population centers while they move their business and technology to the places that the people are leaving? And then they'll no longer be there to have a voice in what happens to their own home countries. I mean, it's literally like they're being bamboozled into moving out of the prime real estate on the planet, probably for the next era of human occupation.
And single point extraction grow zones controlled by one corporation that grows it in a zone with no people and is reliant and responsible for the exports to country of choice. Social credit score, yeah. I was going to, you know, you touched on it earlier in the program, but when this food thing starts to hit this year and the grains are less transiting around the planet and some countries will start to go hungry because their rails aren't working efficiently or it's just too expensive to move it over road from the ports to, you know, where it used to come in by the port instead of having to run it across the country with a truck or something, which is really inefficient. These countries are going to start pointing fingers saying, you're withholding the food from the rest of the world. That's not equality. Because think about 45 North or 40 North and 40 South going offline up to the poles, you know, parts of Northern Canada or Canada at the border there with the United States, parts of Northern Europe, northern China, parts of Russia, all that would go offline. And in the southern hemisphere, it'd be the southern part of South America, southern part of Australia, South Africa. The grains aren't going to be coming at the levels they used to. So with the grain corridor being shut, only some countries this year will have the food for exports. Right? And those foods, those countries are going to be in the driver's seat. They could say yes or no. And then if there's hunger or increasing prices or the grains aren't getting there, and you see, that's a perfect way to cut off animal husbandry. Or if you want to cut off the cattle, just don't send any feed in, and they have to slaughter the cattle first, and then they can worry about the people second. So that's one whole thing is, you know, if you're going to run dairy cattle or beef cattle, something like this, pigs, chicken, it requires grains, animal feeds to feed those animals. Now I'm starting to sound like Kamala. It's an animal. It's a black and white animal. It's a panda that's black and white, and it's also white and black, and it's black around the eyes with white. But you got to have the food to be able to feed the animals. So you see this huge push to take away all cattle because there's too much methane, which I started the show saying. There were 100 million bison during the Little Ice Age just in the United States, northern, you know, parts of Canada. But the reason I bring that up is I was looking at this article about Brazil, and they're going to be a major grain producer. But they're going to lose some production because of the UVB radiation coming from the southern ozone hole, which has expanded greatly after the Hunga Tonga eruption. So the crops will be way thinner in the southern hemisphere as well this year. So I was kind of looking around. I was looking for some things in Brazil, and I came across this article, which I know you're going to like, Ransom. Humans were in South America at least 25,000 years ago. Giant sloth bone pendants reveal. This one goes out of Live Science here. So what they're saying is there's a cave that had different cultural layers in it, and people had been there for thousands and thousands of years. So when they dig down in each different layer, like 3 feet deeper, there's a different set of bones from exiting out of the ice age into things. There's no saber-tooth tigers now, but there were then, you know, those kind of older bones, the last of the mammoths. These kind of more ancient bones at the end of the ice age, they're finding in these layers. Deeper you go, the older the civilization. Now they find another entirely new layer there. Now get this. This is in Toca de Tita Pieya rock shelter. It's like one of those sites down in South Africa that they inhabited for, you know, 30,000 years. So the agreed upon date that the earliest humans could possibly ever get to South America was 22,000 years ago. Now, that was prior to this. Now they found this 27,000 years. So 25,000 to 27,000 years ago is when humans were actually there. That's 5,000 years longer. 5,000 years longer than they previously thought. That's insane. That's going back and finding a new Mesopotamia. Like, what? This is just the most mind-blowing thing here. You just added 5,000 years onto the human timeline of civilization. Like, what? Wow. Just blew me away like that. And the reason I was saying is, you know, why did they choose this here? There's another one just like it in South Africa, which made me think. It had the most – if it was going to be a Garden of Eden, this place would be it. It's been inhabited for 27,000 years. And that other place, I forget the name of it in South Africa, equally as long, like 25, 30,000 years even in Africa. Like what it is about these little Goldilocks, that would be literal Gardens of Eden where these two spots are on two different continents. Because food is going to be the most important thing. And how much will Brazil grow? China's buying it all. I was looking at some grain reports. It's like almost China's on this voracious buying spree because they're having droughts and they can't grow a lot. And it's just crop losses on every major grain producer right now. Humans were in central Brazil at least 27,000 years ago. Ransom, I just added 5,000 years. So what does that tell us about the experts knowing things?
Well, we kind of already, you know, at least on my channel, have been talking about how the entire idea of their Bering land bridge theory was destroyed long ago, even right here where I live, where they found footprints at White Sands, New Mexico, that they first dated at 33 to 35,000 years ago. So they didn't like that date. So they moved it back down to like 23 to 25, but still 10,000 years before they say people, you know, made it past the ice barrier, yada, yada, yada. Obviously, the entire idea of the population of the Americas has been wrong from the very beginning. It relied on the Catholic Church and the Smithsonian for its dates. From early on, and then it was dogma, and then you couldn't, you know, people would get in trouble if they tried to suggest things were older. But just looking at places like Pumapunku, Ollantaytambo, and different places with these megalithic stones, obviously put some of them back pre-flood, pre-diluvian times. And, you know, think about it. If there were people running around eating giant sloths in both New Mexico and Brazil 25 to 30,000 years ago, obviously they had 10,000 years to develop culture here. So we don't even know who those people were, for one, where they came from, which continent, which also screws up their whole idea of, you know, their theories about how man spread out. Because think about this. 27,000 years ago, do you know when they, it's 35,000 years ago that they put the first modern anatomically correct human being, the Cro-Magnon, walking around no different from a European. And then, you know, they're trying to give you these theories about out of Africa, but it seems more like people, human beings of different types, different species, have been walking around the entire planet for millions of years, not tens of thousands, but millions. And we can prove at least hundreds of thousands with different, you know, rock tools and different things from Asia and all over the world. So we know that the entire history that they have given you in school is wrong. They're slowly getting around to admitting that the world was populated up to 30,000 years ago, you know, right here in this article. And right here where I live, there were people, there's lots of these footprints that were left in the gypsum sand. And you can see that animals were crisscrossing, these Pleistocene animals, giant animals. This is a whole nother world that you can't even imagine. Where people lived with dire wolves, cave bears, giant sloths, I mean, et cetera. There was kinds of armadillos in South America that were the size of a motorhome, things like that that could carve out the side of the rock. And now we're linking humans to being at this time, too. So they were living all over the world with these giant animals. And not only that, they were processing these animals. So we're talking big populations. There's some really new work going on in the Amazon forest where now it's starting to look like big, giant portions of the Amazon forest were permaculture designed from scratch, where they removed the local trees that were there and replaced them with nuts and fruit trees. And some of these things are going back into the tens of thousands of years. And we're talking complex civilizations, not a bunch of cavemen going around chipping rocks and, you know, carving stuff with chicken bones. So it puts a new twist on the entire history. But yes, this is kind of where it goes. Now, how did they get here? Well, they probably didn't just walk down the coast. They had boats. There's evidence of boats all along the west coast of the United States in the Pleistocene times, where people were in boats and they were making hooks, all kinds of unique utensils and tools to adapt them to the sea life. And not to mention right around the Catalina Islands, there's an entire island where human beings that were almost 6 foot tall were living. And they were, it's seemingly farming little miniature mammoths, small mammoths that they had trapped on the island and using them for meat. So there's an entire world that they're hiding from human beings. And it makes you wonder, why is that? Now, think about this also. 27,000 years ago is only, you know, 1,000 years before the precession of the equinox repeated. So they would have already had to been keeping track for 25,000 years before this of the heavenly stars and the precession of the equinox to even know what was going on, or we wouldn't have things like the Olmec calendars or the you know, pyramids that you find in Central and South America that are given, they're the cities are now said to be Mayan cities, but it's increasingly looking like there was many civilizations before them. The Olmec is a name that they gave to people that we don't know who are, and we don't even know if they're the ancestors of the Mayans or not, or they were even related to them. What we do know is that they had a calendar that recorded the precession of the equinox. So that means there's a direct link to a 52,000-year history that came all the way up into the time of the Spanish and the Smithsonian, who repeatedly, you know, baffled everybody with BS on their theories about who made it, disregarded the Native Americans' tales, myths, and stories about how they were created, and covered them up completely. Like many of the cities in the East are used to be mounds that were built by the red paint people or Clovis people, who knows. There's probably been several waves of different people from not only Europe, but Asia coming into it. And there's a lot of people theorizing that even Africans reached South America at one time. Nobody actually knows who the different people were because they didn't leave bones and DNA. But according to the Smithsonian, everybody came from China and they all came down the Bering Land Bridge, which was always preposterous when they talked about it in schools because they only gave them a time period of 250 years to make it from North America all the way down to Tierra del Fuego or whatever it is in the bottom of South America, where there's evidence of occupation for close to 10,000 years there.
Yeah, but since I was in the ancient history section here, ancient Chinese relics point to unbroken cultural links that began a million years ago. And that, you know, what's so interesting is that, you know, where their last layer in that. So they go back and they name several sites, Lientian Man, Dali Man, Huanglong Man. This is all discovered in Shanxi. So it's a bunch of different sites that have been cataloged over. These sites were at least a million years inhabited. So there's several of them. It's not just the first one they found. So it goes into this one had the latest stone tools at the site were dated 30,000 years. And then suddenly, whoosh, it just stopped being inhabited there until recently, you know, say 7,000 years ago or so. So what is that drop off date right there? That's a huge thing because, you know, the precession of the equinox, if you would have gone through that termination point of the cycle of the rebooting, the reset, the noticeable change from one cycle to the next. And so I'm wondering if it's an equivalent amount of change through each of the zodiac signs and it just continues, like some are more amplified because we're in a more energetic, dense part of space. Some of them have more debris coming in because it's just more debris dense region of space with the lower magnetic field that allows a lot of debris to come around and hit the Earth. I mean, is it all equally like that, or is it just like a clock thing where the cuckoo comes out, bing, and there's this, you know, something that's orders of magnitude, like a really heavy, powerful cycle that's built into that? Or is it more of an equivalency of pretty much it's the same amount of change, but what we were used to, it's, you know, cataclysmic change. But, you know, each time it is normal. That's what I'm wondering coming out, because this specific date of 30,000 to, say, 27,000 years ago seems to be another boundary point of cultural layer after cultural layer. When it comes through the 1 million year, 1.1 million period here, prehistoric hominids, Nanluo River Valley in Shanxi. Okay. How many of these cycles have they been through? Go back. We'll make it even math and we'll go even. I know it's Ransom. I know I got to split a hair with you. I know it's not 27,000 years or 26,750 years. I just want to use 25,000 because it's easy math. So you get four of the cycles in every 100,000 years. So if these areas were being inhabited from 1.1 million years ago and then they completely stopped 30,000 years ago, you got to think they would have gone through 40 of these cycles of the great year, 40 of them. So they pretty much would have wired it in with the plant harvest days, how much the weather's going to change, what kind of shifts would be expected. But it's weird that then they just stopped inhabiting the site. You know, that date, that boundary date, something significant happened. So they had 40 of these changes of the great year. And then suddenly this last one was so bad
that those places had been and how they stopped. It got, I don't know, maybe they knew a new place to go to. That one, okay, you know, something shifted enough where we can't use this one again. We know the new place, though. So I wonder if the Green Arrows are the new place.
You know, I was always wondering about some of these sites, too, because a long time ago, I noticed that some of the oldest sites, like even Göbekli Tepe, now that they're uncovering that, and some of these earthworks that Diamond and them went up and looked at in Idaho. I think it was Idaho. Anyway, when you look at them, you see the cardinal directions and obviously some archaeoastronomy in the formation of these buildings and stuff, like there's some on the Minoan Islands and things like that. But if you look at them, they slightly tilt over time, meaning that something was going on where they had to readjust these lines of sights with celestial objects or different places, meaning that, in my opinion, maybe the Earth, you know, moved just a little bit back and forth. I don't know if that's it, but look at this. I think you brought this up before, and I'm not buying that the Earth would tilt from groundwater like this one says.
No, not at all. Are you kidding me? I hate to interject, but there's three times more groundwater under the Earth's crust than there is on all the oceans, rivers, and lakes combined. That amount of water under the crust, there's three times more than that.
Right, and we should know that anyway because of the way that water works. So if the ocean level at the level of the sea level, you should be able to just imagine a line straight into the land all the way in. So the more the elevation goes up, you know that there's layers of water in there draining out. We know that, and we know that there's much more water deep down inside, and they've admitted that lately. So like I was saying, I don't buy into the 31.5 inches that, you know, the Earth shouldn't have happened. Something else did that if it happened. But what I was saying is obviously there is some kind of mechanism that makes the Earth tilt and change appearance from time to time, because, you know, a lot of the old, the oldest stuff is looking at Draco's more for the North Star than the North Star. So we know that there was a slightly different tilt at one time. If you knew this was going to happen, though, you could calculate exactly, in my opinion, where all the newer grow zones would be. Like, everything would change just a little bit. And I think they already have evidence of when this happened. I don't know any other explanation for why some of the old buildings would slightly tilt over time, unless their perspective changed and they had to redo the monument so that it would be correct. Or maybe they messed it up the first time, but it's something that I've seen as a pattern in a lot of the ancient stuff where they keep tilting it over time. And it makes you kind of wonder, is that the evidence right there of a 52,000 year history, where maybe they built it wrong in the first place because they were using older information and mathematics, and they didn't account for the change. Kind of like, you have all of these people in the Western world that use Western astrology, even though that's based on the stars, 2,000 years ago or so. So it's not even somewhere the lost in translation happened from the Vedic astrology that was actually keeping track of the moon, the stars, and, all of the stuff compared to the Western astrology that just kind of pays attention to the 12 zodiacs as they were 2,000 years ago. And if you notice, everything is repeating itself from 2,000 years ago. And kind of, I was talking to my son about this because he's kind of asking, why they do this, why they do that. And I was pointing out that 2,000 years ago, they got rid of the old pantheon of 12. So they were trying to get rid of people paying attention to the importance of the precession of the equinox. And it got turned over more to an anecdotal kind of thing like the astrology is. And they tried to hide the real true meaning of that, which is that people have been keeping track for a really long time of astrology. And that's why we pay attention to the zodiac. So they changed over to a monotheistic God, which was perfect at the time to conquer Europe and, you know, like pull everybody in and unify it. And now we're 2,000 years later, we're at the end of the two fishes Jesus era into the Aquarius. So you're going to see institution after institution rebranding itself, destroying itself, and kind of rebirthing itself with a new name. And I don't know if you remember this, because I think I was talking to you when it happened. When I saw one of the first little Antifa riots, the little leftist Marxist riots, finally tear down what's the guy's name? I always get a brain thing right when I think of him. The Mason, Southern General
Pike.
Pike. Yes. God, I don't know why. Every time I think of him, I lose it, I guess. But anyway, when I saw them knock over his thing, I knew that the kind of Masonic message was approving of the Marxist changeover of civilization. It was kind of like a message. Because every other time there's ever been any kind of riot or anything, no one has ever touched Albert Pike's statue there. And everybody has always known that he's been a Confederate and a Mason. And he's the only Confederate general to even have a statue and his tomb there in Washington, D.C. And they protected it for a really long time. But then they let it fall along with the founding fathers of the U.S., which is a big message that they are ready to change over to the new thing. And I'm going to put up that map again, because, you know, I didn't even know what you were talking about till you sent that over here. Oh, that's the wrong one. That's the one that's showing how hot it was in 1930 versus right now. But back to this map, because it's like perfect right here. Though you see those countries with the states and countries with the red arrows going down. That's the ones literally that they're trying to take down right now. Even there in the Middle East there. Saudi Arabia, I think, is going to reform into what Turkey is creating, which is a new Islamic state. So we're going to see a new manifestation of the Ottoman Empire forming, and it's going to take a lot of Europe with it when they redesign the lines here. And if you've noticed in the European EU, they're trying to vote it in where the EU can veto individual countries. How do you think that's going to work out? That's a World War III starter right there.
Well, that's what I was saying. It's going to be a reconsolidation of countries this time, where World War II, it was a breakup of all those larger nations, you know, because think about the armistice in World War I. You know, you talked about the Ottoman Empire. That was shattered into still larger than what we know today, the countries on the map. And then World War II, boom, that just broke everything apart. You know, now it seems like it's going to reverse and kind of re-shrink itself. It's almost like, you know, something that's gone to its maximum expansion, and then it's going to shrink back down in on itself. Because think how easy it might be to distribute capital across that. You know, because right now, if you look, I think it's 207 countries, 208 countries this year. It changes every year. But if you go back the time, go into a map of 1850, it was under 100, and a lot of those were empires or controlled by kings still, royalty. So the reconsolidation of countries, think about distributing wealth again or restarting a system, would be much easier to do it with under, let's even say 100 countries, than it would be with 208 countries. Because there's going to be a lot of contraction in these quote-unquote Western world. It's going to be, you know, an easier set of books to maintain if there's half of the amount of ledger work to do. So that makes sense that the blockchain can work faster, because if you're going to consolidate the amount of countries, because DLT, which is distributed ledger, you know, you're talking about RippleNet and on-demand liquidity and everything, and they need to settle faster or at the rate eclipsing what credit card settlements do across the planet every single day. But they need to be able to do that every single second. Now, you think about how much easier it would be with far less central banks across the planet. Instead of having 200 central banks, there would only be 100. And those would consolidate into regions, just like you mentioned with the EU. Because the EU is going to snap into one region. And what the former Soviet Union was, they're going to snap into another region. And then you go across the Caucasus, they're going to snap together like it was. And then you go Ottoman Empire, bam, back together again.
But then to, you know, mobilize capital into those markets, going to be easy. So they consolidate around the natural resources, which was sort of the BRICS-aligned idea. If you reach all the world map and you include those new areas to include the resources that were going to be the bedrock of the new currency system from the BRICS, gold-backed and commodities-backed. So you just redraw the map around to have the commodities within these new empires. And then, of course, it's easy to trade amongst each other. So if you redraw the map around the oil-producing nations and consolidate it into a single, then at least you would know that is coming from that trade block. And what about the agricultural zones that are not yet set up in the northern Africa and Sahel area? I mean, if you can get that into a double rotation crop, you can control half the world's food supply right there. You tap the underground water resources like Gaddafi did, and it was growing hundreds of thousands of acres of sorghum out in the old floodplains of the ancient mega lakes. But he was pulling that from underground, the Nubian sandstone aquifer. And then the above ground rains increasing because of these natural changes that Ransom and I talk about on these, you know, longer duration cycles. The north or the West African monsoons shifting to dump more rain, but that's a once in a 4,000 year cycle. So who could control that grow zone? And if everywhere else goes off, or if you follow the UN where they're saying these areas are going to be off limits for humanity, so then suddenly you got entire countries that are off limits where they previously, right now as we knew them, grew massive amounts of food. But oh no, that's a no human habitation zone in the new world. But then it all gets consolidated over into northern Africa, the growing areas. Half the world's food supply, again, you know, who's going to have that as their commodity base? If you're going to be in a new trading union, obviously North Africa, actually Africa has two different trading unions, but they're also combined. They got the North African Trading Union. All those countries from Mali over to Tanzania and everywhere in between up to Morocco, that whole area there, Mauritania, it's all connected already financially and trade-wise. So think about what they have as resources to put into a new system. Irregardless of double rotating crops on top of the land there and all that infrastructure that they would require and all the investment. And like, you could build an entire new economy for Africa just by setting the grow zone up there. And the amount of people that would need to go to work and the amount of all these, you know, engineers and workers, construction workers, repair people. And then once it gets growing, you're going to need the machines and the repair parts and all this thing if you're going to keep it in the agriculture like we do today. I mean, just that zone alone would grow more food than Canada and the United States combined, if that puts it in perspective. Combined. We'll be right back. I want to talk about freight waves and Yellow Bank barking back. Are we going to lose 10% of the freight on the roads on Monday? To be seen. Join us when we come back from the break. Dave Devine and Ransom Godwin.
You're listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
Interested in the paranormal, murder mystery, real natural law? Do you enjoy interviews with amazing guests? Then join Fripp Rick every Monday night, 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Right here on Revolution Radio. Studio A, freedomslips.com. Crypt Riffs, I think, thank you. Welcome to the Crypt.
Join me at Revolution Radio, Studio B, at 11 a.m. on Saturday for Free Association, when we take a look at philosophy, spirituality, psychology, social issues, and geopolitics. It's every Saturday at 11 a.m. Eastern on Studio B at freedomslips.com.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven, Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of whose program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at higher risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Thanks for listening while we take that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And now we're going to get back to your host.
And welcome back for the second hour of Mini Ice Age Conversations. Late arrival. Slapped me on the knuckles with a ruler. Yikes. Thank you for joining us. So many unusual things going across the world. Now, one thing I was talking with Christy Lee yesterday on her show was about why I was trying to explain my point that, you know, these magnetic anomalies are coming in and possible space debris in 2025. And a lot of this infrastructure we're seeing now can't be salvaged. There's going to be a lot of, more earth changes, volcanism and earthquakes coming in through the next 2 years. Just based on magnetics alone, electromagnetism, this cycle we're going through, there's going to be a huge amount of, like, larger rumblings, shall we say. So I was saying, you know, a lot of this infrastructure is not going to be even usable or repairable. We're going to, you know, have to let it completely move to where it's going to move, and then we can repair it after it stabilizes again. There are somewhere like 2030-ish, 2032, after we go through this magnetic field anomaly here. And I was saying, you know, the collapse keeps happening. These systems never got rebuilt back. Like, where did all these C-class CEOs and CFOs and COOs, all the company people, where'd they all run to? Like, the enormous amount of bankruptcies and business closures of the corporate level, I mean, thousands of them just are gone. And look at that, you know, complete destruction, wipeout, and contraction of the economy and business during COVID. And I say, why did we not ever try to build it back? See, that's a question that everybody should be asking. It continues to shrink to this day, and more so. And nobody has plans to try to build it back and, you know, like try to restart the economy and get these jobs back and start this. No way. It is going the complete opposite direction. Complete opposite direction. And then here, the reason I wanted to start that segue is Yellow Corporation, which is a less than full carrier. Like, for example, Dollar Store would use them because it's less than a full load. That's their niche. If you didn't have 100% of one thing, like coming from any factory, you're generally going to have a full load because it's that product in the truck moving. But if you have deliveries to like 10 stores or something, you would use Yellow, and they would deliver to all 10 different stores. Although it's not just one truck directly from a terminal to another terminal completely full, and it moves from one place to another place. So that was Yellow's niche, was doing that less than full truckload route. And it's 10% of full American cargo. So out of all American cargo moving across the entire United States, 10% of it's this company here. And it looks like they're going to be going out of business or completely halted on Monday. See, what they do is they own the Teamsters, which is a union, workers union. They owe them and their 20,000 Teamsters that are employed by Yellow. They owe them monies for insurance, and they just can't. They don't have enough working capital to do that, so they're asking to defer payment for like 2 more months. So these Teamsters are saying, wait, you're not going to pay our insurance for 2 months? What? You're going to withhold what? It was all this, like the, you know, inclusion in withhold payments. So they're like, we're going to stop. We're just going to stop. So they issued, Teamsters issued a strike notice to stop all work on Monday if the payment is not made. And they're looking for, I don't know, $137 million for the first round here, but that's all the cash they had. And then there was another $100 million in cash that they wanted. And it would be total $1.5 billion, but the company doesn't have it. So they're like, you can hold on and we'll pay you later. Or we can just stop it all and nobody gets paid anything. And this 10% of our American freight just collapses and it never comes back. Because they were already talking about auctioning off the terminals that Yellow held. That's already in the works. If this strike goes on, they will never come back from this. And that was the whole thing. This is one of the most important news stories brewing through the weekend. If Yellow Freight Carriers goes offline and it goes off Monday, they will not come back as a company. There's going to be abandoned cargo laying all over the place and insurance claims on that cargo, which will stress even all these other insurance claims on the insurers for homes and health and all these things that are seeing massive run-ups in their claims. And then they're going to start auctioning off all of the properties that were owned by Yellow Corporation. So they're looking to the private carriers or just, you know, private truck owners to try to jump into take over. But this is a well-oiled machine. You just don't have, you know, I don't know how many exact drivers are involved in this, but that many individual new truckers coming in to try to streamline deliveries. So let's say they're working with 50,000 trucks that are on going out less than full container load and 50,000 different routes to different stores. So they need 50,000 new drivers that all know how to drive a semi. Don't get me wrong. But now they all have to learn how to load and get the routes and who's going to wait in line and how's all this going to work across the entire United States. It's going to be months before that ever gets functioning smoothly again. And then UPS, because it's also Teamsters, is going to go on strike. Now, that's not a guaranteed, but seems like everywhere you look, there's something in progress. Now it's labor against actually having a job of a company. So for me, I'm a little bit baffled on this. I understand in the old days being super hard, but we're in a collapsed ED economy and they want to make it like it was back in the 1990s when they can pound on the table. Like, you know, we're at this point now where the systems are starting to break down. So Revolution Radio, thank you for letting me talk about this with Ransom, because some of our channels – like you can't even share my links on Facebook anymore. This is things like this happening off the Adapt 2030 channel. You can't share those. Oh, especially the Brighteon ones or the Brighteon TV episodes. You can't share that on Facebook. They won't even let you put the post in.
Same with Twitter. I can't – they're like, oh, it's an unknown site. But if you put in some of my YouTube videos, you can't share the feed on Facebook either. So thanks for letting us talk tonight. If you appreciate that, revolution.radio in your web browser there. Consider a donation. But Ransom, you know what happens if the work stoppage occurs Monday? Then what happens to our already vulnerable complex systems?
You'll beg for the AI's help and all these companies that are pushing AI trucks who have been driving on the roads and being okayed by the government for some time now are going to take over that role. They're going to take over that role because they don't have to pay anyone. They don't have to worry about strikes. They don't have to worry about people not working. They don't have to worry about any of that. But first they'll give you a big, like they do everything. There'll be a big emergency that, people will be clamoring for the AI to help them to get their groceries. That's what all of this is basically going into, is from policing to how you get your food on the table. They want you to accept this entire dystopian security grid in the name of safety and sustainability and stability and all of these other things to protect the environment. And think about that. You were mentioning those millions of bison, and then they try to convince people today that their hundreds of thousands of cattle on their ranches are destroying the planet. Obviously, that's not true. I just had this weird vision because I've been doing experiments here, totally off of, out of the way of this AI thing. But I do think that's what they're going to do with all of the delivery services. It's all going to be converted to AI. And that way they'll have, a total stranglehold over all of the economies, all of the products, so that you have to depend on them to get anything. And it's going that way, not only from just products that you want, but down to the meal that's being delivered to your home. And all of these little apps and trends about food delivery, there's a whole generation of people that don't really even know where the food comes from. And now they're going to be tracked and traced to a degree that people just cannot imagine. And they can't imagine it because they can do it while you naively live in 1990s, while you think the world is in a 1990s or early 2000, just like the Matrix. They're convincing you that everything that you need is stuck. For some reason, there's no new innovation in the fields of increasing humans' potential on Earth or making life easier. What you're looking at is every single advancement in technology are anti-human, from the surveillance state to the way that they track and trace for economic reasons about trying to figure out what you're eating and how to trick you into buying certain products or boycotting certain products or whatever it is. It's from the top down now. And now they're even admitting it, and not only admitting it, but kind of putting it in your face. Like I was saying, front page Drudge today, AI to write news, dawn of new journalism. But they've already been doing that. So every little program that they got from now into the next century is going to be so technologically controlled with every aspect of how to control a human, from the science that they figured out about our behaviors to how to manipulate our mind, to brain, all of these advertising type things. They're not advertising like a better product. They're advertising that, if you behave a certain way, you'll buy these products. And if you buy those products, then you're evil. You're evil because you don't want to eat meat. And did you notice that they also approved cloned, or I shouldn't say cloned. I guess it has to be cloned. It's lab grown meat, chicken. So that's going to be popping up at places all over. And what they're going to do is slowly introduce that into the diet, just like they have everything. So when they came out with aspartame, it was supposed to be great and help people and blah, blah, blah. And then somehow it got in almost all the products at the grocery store. And now finally, a roundaboutly, the government and the WHO and everybody's, oh, well, that might you know, it just maybe that's a carcinogen, just maybe. But too bad it's in all the products now, and you think they're going to take it out of it? Think again, because people like Donald Rumsfeld and people like that are the ones that owned the companies that came up with these things and got their buddies in the government to approve them. So we're way beyond those days of aspartame in the product. So now they have a complete monopoly on the food and what they're going to do with it. And there is a war coming over food, I think, at least an economic war, about who's going to offer real food versus the people that are going to continue to lie to you and tell you that they're selling you food, when what they're actually selling you is biotech. They're selling you biotech with probably intended purposes and unintended consequences in this transition of the human species, because we are being taken out, and that's what everything is pointing to. So get ready for the ideas of cluttered cities. And remember, in World War II, they named them. It was called a ghetto. They came up with that word. And you notice how the rest Western world took that term and put it on poor neighborhoods. So first it was a little controlled area where they locked people in it. And then they kind of moved that word away from the idea. Now it's just the area where poor people live. But in the near future, it's going to be a place where people are also locked in it again, where you can't go from this zone to that zone because you don't have the appropriate palm print or chip or credit score that's associated with those biometrics technologies. So we know now, like, you can't go anywhere. Just a basic camera can connect to algorithms on the other end. So it doesn't need to be like special cameras and things like that. They can use these algorithms to find people. So you're not going to be hiding. You're not going to be off the grid. If that's what was some of your imagination about being a prepper, that you would just grow food and hide, you're going to have to deal with civilization. So the only way out of that is for massive numbers of people to say no to these no programs, say, no, I don't want a palm scan. And no, I don't want to have facial recognition unlock my phone. No, I don't want my TV reporting back, you know, so you're going to have to start picking and voting with your dollars. So only buying products that don't do those things, like i.e. old, you know, like we talked about that last week. There's going to be a new market for people just trying to have regular appliances that don't snitch to the government on what they're doing, when they're home, how much energy they use, which products did they buy or not buy, and are you keeping illegal foods in your refrigerator? What if your refrigerator told on you? Not to mention there's a smart toilet that analyzes, you know, well, what you let go of. So people don't understand the world that we're going into. They only understand the old world of suffering, and that's what they're going to keep giving us as a fake reality. And if you don't believe me, just turn on the TV and switch to one of those channels, ABC, NBC, CBS, CNN, Fox, BBC. You pick it. Algorithms and AI, learning machines that have access to the internet, are now writing the scripts for those people to tell you what's going on. And it makes you wonder, are they writing the script all the way from the top level? Like, I mean, above the central banks. Who writes the script that plans and plots for hundreds, if not thousands of years, to direct or kettle civilization to a specific point where we have a choice of going the transhuman route or the natural human being route? And that's where we're at. So how much can we say no to stop this? And, you know, it's easy to say I'm going to grow food and just eat organic and blah, blah, blah. But where are you going to get it? And how are you going to, you know, interact with society with these new technologies dictating what you do, what you go, where you go, what you buy, how you speak, and all of these things?
I'll come back to another one. FedNow launches, reassures public that service has no relation with central bank digital currencies. Although, quote, Chairman Powell says it was certainly something we would look into. Okay. So the way that I would just describe Ransom's last set of things is like not gaslighting. It's a step above that. It's different now. It's like bending the reality lighting.
where the thoughts, the beliefs, the every single, there's so much overwhelm in the news and so many articles coming in so fast that are so heavy and such an effect that they wired it out. Can you imagine AI trying to control human emotion now? Like every, you know, if the news is controlled by that, like how you could bend reality with just the way the headline's written and the words conveyed therein. So FedNow launches today, if you hadn't known. That's the coincides and overlaps. This is interesting. The FedNow launch overlaps and coincides with the closure of the grain ports in Ukraine and also the subsequent bombing completely to smithereens of Odessa, which was the grain loading areas in the Black Sea in Ukraine. And a huge escalation of, you know, U.S. wanting to force grain ships through there with military to try to confront the Russian Navy right there to make something happen. That all just occurred right now when they launched FedNow, if you can believe such a thing of occurrences could happen. So it needed that major of a distraction to distract you away from a central bank digital currency. There's no more privacy in your spending of money. Soon to outlaw cash announcement came out today. Quirky how all that happened during all this other madness with food prices, grain cutoffs, possible, you know, naval action between two superpowers in a tiny body of water. You know, like what? Really? FedNow won't be an app per se. It's more designed to allow banks to move money instantly. This ties right directly into distributed ledger and also operating on RippleNet, on-demand liquidity. So see, they're partnering, and the Fed now has integrated with others. They're not actually XRP, the coin. It's Ripple Systems or RippleNet, Ripple on-demand liquidity within that ecosystem. And it was all designed as a ledger anyway, because that's the only way it could operate with all banks. Bank for International Settlements down originally was saying DLT is the only way to go. And then, these countries are bringing in their own blockchains native, but they need to partner with something else that's already set out there. So if you look at the ISSO, 2022 coins that will be allowed to interoperate with this new system, Hashgraph Hedera is one of those. Ripple is another one. Ripple Labs, Ripple Net, Ripple On Demand Liquidity. XRP is going to be included in that ecosystem. What else? Stellar Lumens was another one because it is an instant. It can transact faster than anything you can do on a credit card. Well, like orders of magnitude, just blows credit card speed away. Like they're really hundreds of times faster. So see, these kind of payment systems need to integrate and ride right on top of this new blockchain technologies that's integrated on top of other things that were built outside this federal ecosystem back in 2015, 16, 17, 18. Everybody was inventing the blockchain, and none of these banks were even noticing it was on the radar until Bitcoin hit 20 grand. Like that whole development phase was between all these tokens, interoperable tokens, and proof of work, proof of time, proof of stake, way before any of these guys got into it. So there's a lot of native outside the federal system that's integrating and connecting to now the federal system because it either worked fast enough, it could transact fast enough, it could balance fast enough, these sort of things. So Hashgraph, you know, this is a strange thing. I was told many years ago, like Hashgraph is where it's going with the crypto. Like what you understand is blockchain now is just an intermediary step to Hashgraph. By 2030 or so, it's going to move and migrate to Hashgraph. And I'd heard about it, and it blew my mind. Like, you're already at the apex of technology with blockchains and distributed ledger settlements, etc. Like, what is this Hashgraph thing? And sure enough, Hashgraph is the center core that allows all of this to operate. Like for right now, FedNow and the European Union doing it and everybody else that's going to issue their own central bank digital currency is going to be operating. Hashgraph is right in the center of the center of the operating core of it. They're just going to use it to do instant payments between banks currently. But you know as well as I do. They say the Fed says all 10,000 or so participating banks right now that, you know, participate in the Federal Reserve Insurance Corporation program or the FDIC programs, et cetera, anything that's involved in banking that comes in the United States, approximately 10,000 or so banks can join Fed now if they want to. Now, are you kidding me? AI just rolls out and you have to use AI to even stay competitive. Like, you're going to have to get on the FedNow system as a bank to even remotely stay competitive, even at the most base level, to get in on FedNow using blockchain. If you don't, and you're still going to stay on the old system that requires 3 days clearing it, are you kidding me? Or even overnight. Come on. They're talking about fractions of a second, like 1,000th of a second. Think about that. Cutting down to settlements of 1/1,000th of a second. And think about the interest payment on a 10-second loan compared to 1/1,000th of a second loan. What the interest payment difference would be. That's what that whole SOFOR conversion is about, is to rock this thing down in where you can go 1/1,000th of a second on a loan, literally, all the way up to like 1 day, 1 week, overnight repo. Think about that. 8-hour loan, what would your interest rate be? 1/1,000th of a second loan, or 1/500th of a second, which you could run four spins through when it gets down to that 1/1,500 and then the 2,000. 1/1,000th of a second, 1/1,500th of a second, 1/1,100th of a second, and then you get down to like the 1/20th of a second, 1/10th of a second, and those can be arbitraged through the layers down into like 1/1,000th of a second. So this is where the new scraping of everything is going to come into, as you can take it down. And I've seen some protocols that will possibly, and I'm just saying possibly, allow you to go 12 digits deep into the amount of time. Like 1/1,000th of a second is only 0.0001. It's only 4 digits deep. Like, they're talking on some of these protocols going down 12 digits down, to allow them different interest rates at the different amount of time for the borrowed money down to that quadrillionth of a second, literally. And this is the new system they're setting up, and they're saying it has nothing to do with your personal finance. It's just for moving money instantly right now, the FedNow program. That's it. And they even have a catch. So you know right away, when Federal Reserve, this is off the Federal Reserve Twitter, is FedNow service replacing cash? Is it a new central bank digital currency? Watch the video below. So they're already trying to push it so hard that it's not. And they even have a screen before. You know, you can put your own graphic up there on the screen before you play the video, like whatever, catchy picture, get people's eyes. Here they have a Q&A on the front image before you even play the video. No, the Fed service is not related to a digital currency. The FedNow service is a payment service of the Federal Reserve, making available for its partner banks and credit unions to transfer funds for their customers. Now, wait, I thought I'm a customer, but they're saying it has nothing to do with the populace. It's bank to bank. But in the first paragraph, when it says no, credit unions to transfer funds for their customers, I mean, then it brings it down into, all right, the customer's now tracked. It's not just the bank getting money. Like, hey, I'm bank A, I need 10,000 cash tomorrow. We ran out of cash. It was a busy weekend, 4th of July. Everybody came in and they took all the cash. We need like more physical bills. We need to order them. Please deliver them. Armored car, we'll take them. They're not talking about that at all. They're talking about every digital transfer. And see, this is what I'm talking about, the double facing of it here, this whole bending of reality. It's way beyond gaslighting. It's actually changing the perception of the way you think of what the reality presented in front of you is compared to what you're really seeing with your eyes, and trying to say your eyes are lying to you. Anyway, Ransom, I get rambling sometimes. Please take me away from this.
Well, how about let's go on the perception of what they're doing to the products. I saw a article on, I think it was like Shift Gold or something like that. But anyway, they were talking about the shrinkflation, but literally like the shrinkflation where the companies, you know, they bump up the price just a little bit. But if you notice, the product is not the same as before. Like, and they had a bunch of examples. Let me Yeah, here it is. Okay, so there, Ortega taco shells, 12 yellow corn shells, and that's what it was. It was 5.8 ounces, but the new box, same price or a little more, is only 4.9 ounces. And then here's like a whole list of stuff that they do that with. Double rolls of Bounty paper towels have shrunk from 98 select a size sheets down to 90. Triple rolls downsized from 147 select a size sheets down to 135. The standard 92 ounce bottle of Gain detergent, now 88 ounces. A family size bag of double stuffed Oreos now have four fewer cookies in it. Did your family shrink, or did you just notice shrinkflation? The 19.4 ounce bottle was downsized to 18 ounces. A package of Sara Lee blueberry bagels was reduced from five down to four bagels, and the package dropped by 3.3 ounces. And they just go on and on. Green Giant frozen fruits, broccoli from 10 ounces down to 8 ounces. And all of these things are examples of how they either made the box bigger with less product inside, or you got less packaging on it, which would be the preferable thing. But that's not what they do. They give you less of the product for the same price. So, you know, you got the administration claiming that everything is, you know, the best it's ever been. We got record job growth, but not really. We have, you know, inflation is beat, they say. Well, obviously, that's not what the consumer is seeing. Things are going up in cost and prices. But not only that, this example of how everything is shrinking, where you don't even get as much. But guess what? If you don't eat these boxed foods from the box corporations, you're not getting robbed in this way. You know, guess what? My squash plant kind of will put out anything you want. You know, I have so many squash plants outside right now, and they make the little ones. So you can just gather, you know, a bunch of little ones and have some really soft something, or you can get the bigger one, slice it and fry it, or you can stuff it full of pork and bake it. I mean, it's endless. And everybody's crying about this fake wave of the planet burning up. And I had an example of that a minute ago, where it's showing, you know, the 1930s temperatures plus 100. You might have saw that. That's Tony Heller put that out. So this is a map of the U.S., and it shows above 100 degree Fahrenheit in 1936 and above 110 degrees Fahrenheit in 1936. And you can see that they were having a massive heat wave, and there's way more dots of this hot weather from coast to coast, like right under Maine, right around Massachusetts, Rhode Island, all the way up to the Canadian border, all the way to the West Coast and down into my parts. And then you look at the map for above 100 degrees for 2023 and above 110 for 2023, and you find probably, like, I don't know, 1/8 the amount of places that are actually hot or hotter than normal. So basically no difference. And you notice they leave out the parts of the world that are cold. They just don't talk about it. The other day I was looking at the local news, and they were talking about, oh, El Paso's going to hit another record of 109 degrees. And we just took the temperature at the hottest part of the day out at the El Paso Sunport Airport, International Airport, right out there on the tarmac where the jets are there and they're blowing and there's no water near it. There's no trees near it. There's no nothing that would bring the temperature down normally. But no, they have a thermometer out on a giant area of nothing but asphalt and concrete where jets drop down constantly, pushing out exhaust, you know, jet engines, which increases the temperature, by the way. So they're telling people that, but what they're not telling them is, like, right over where I'm living, okay, it was 105 today, but if I wanted to, I could drive 15 miles away and it was only 85 degrees because it's right up in a different elevation. But they weren't, you know, on the news, they're not saying, hey, look, in Rio Doso, it's only 85 degrees up there. Maybe you should go up there. You know what? And another thing they don't tell you, I've realized, they put the little things out and they got everybody used to one emergency after another. I'm sure you remember in the 90s when the news was putting out in the early 2000s, all the ozone warnings on the news making you think you were going to die if you drove out and you drove through the ozone that was sitting on the ground, and that all of that being due to man-made pollution and look what we're doing and stuff. And then, you know, that kind of nobody, everybody kind of just ignored it after a while, right? So that wasn't that popular. So then they started putting out the UV indexes, making you think that, you know, if you went outside for any minutes at a time, you were going to completely die of skin cancer. But now they don't really push all of that stuff at the same time. But I realized they should be at certain times, but that's the times they don't. So like I was watching the UV index, and if anybody has ants out there, pay attention to the ants in correlation to not only the UV index, but also the cosmic, what do you call that? I always forget. Anyway, the index of the solar particles coming in, and they are smart. So if you don't want to deal with technology, just look at the ants. They tell you when you should be outside and when you shouldn't be outside, or at least the harvester ants here. So I bet there's a direct correlation between like when the index goes up to 9, 10, or 11, which is on the highest end of the UV, and down to like they'll be out around 2 and 3. So 1, 2, and 3, they're just out. They're doing all of their business. As soon as the UV index goes up, they go back in their hole. They stop working. They take a break, have a siesta. So if we just use nature to look at, that's what we should be doing. And meanwhile, they're trying to convince you that, you know, the earth is having unprecedented heat waves. My kid the other day was telling me about articles he saw that said the earth is the hottest it's ever been. It's never been this hot ever. Can you believe it, David Dubine, that, you know, we have hit a record of the hottest earth ever, supposedly, but not really.
No, even that statement's silly. I mean, you look at the last interglacial, and going back, you want to talk about past. And, you know, some of these articles kind of make me sad that humanity is driven down to this level and that people in the news can lie this much and can tell this many untruths and expect you to believe it. And if you question it and say, that sounds a little outlandish to me, I just want to ask a question. Because it sounds a little outlandish. I never heard a time frame of 125,000 years before. Because literally, most time when you hear things in the climate debate, it's always like 100 years, a satellite record, this sort of thing. And even if we talk about history and prehistory, you know, the birth of Christ, 2,000 years prior. So if I say, tell me a culture that was 3,000 years prior, but don't mention the Egyptians, then what was there? And if I say mention something 5,000 years ago, but not anything in the Egyptians, what could you point to? You know, if you go to Petra, for example, would be a good example, the Hittites. But go further back into Samaria, and then it kind of stops. And then you get this Younger Dryas period where they had a cometary impact on an ice sheet, and then we lost 3,000 years of time. You know, after that cometary impact, that thing would have hit on the ground. Okay, you got 10 years of complete cloud. Humanity's, you know, bottlenecked back in, hourglass back into 10 million breeding pairs, maybe 10 million. Okay, but then it come out of that. But then there's 3,000 years of stable climate before the 8,200-year event, or the 8.2K or the 8.1K. It depends if you split in that 50 years. If you think 8,100 years ago, we can define it down to 50 years or 51 years. That's where you come to the 8.2K or the 8.1K event. But anyway, massive drop in temperature. I mean massive drop in temperature. Completely wiped everything out that was anything remotely close to a civilization at that time. So yeah, 3,000 years prior, after the Younger Dryas, and it started to form some massive civilization, you know, 8,000 years ago, and wham, the temperature drops, you know, 10 to 12, maybe 15 degrees Fahrenheit in many places, average global temperature drop off of that time. And you look at today's temperatures, and we're still out on the cooler range. But go back 125,000 years. That's why I was trying to bring the big number up. You know, to put that in perspective, even talking about 12,500 years ago in human history, I mean, you ask the average person on the street, okay, tell me about human history 12,500 years ago. Very few would know the Younger Dryas impact even occurred at that time. Now, what was prior to it coming out of the Ice Age? There were still saber-toothed tigers around, mammoths like Ransom talked about. You know, they make it seem very primitive back then, but what if it was much more advanced because they had 40,000 years of stable climate during the Ice Age? around the equator to 25 north and 25 south to create societies. Like once that 2 miles of ice had settled in over the planet, say 70,000 years prior, it would have been locked in for 40,000 plus years. And you got to realize what we've developed here, it's not even 8,000 years old. You know, history really starts 7,000 years ago with the Sumerians. So you think about 7,000 years to bring us to rocket ships and computers and everything. So from 70,000 years prior all the way to 20,000 years prior, they had a very stable climate. That's 50,000 years. And I'm going to be kind and only say to 30,000, because we talked about that boundary mark earlier in the show, where it seems like the great year when it turned there, something got incredibly disrupted. So I gave you from 70,000 years ago to 30,000 years ago. That's 40,000 years of stable climate where you could grow crops. You could have excess for nutrition, which allows people to think and create. So I'm not even going to go back to the last interglacial where it was actually warmer than today by about 1.5 to maybe 2 degrees Celsius. Just the average temperature through their entire interglacial was about 1.5 to 2 degrees Celsius warmer based on ice core samples, the Greenland Ice Survey Project 2, which was the gold standard for global temperatures until it disproved the point of, wait, it was a little warmer than in the past. So, you know, you all depend on the cycles that you want to go into, but this whole Earth is heating up, it's related directly to the electromagnetic field changes expected during this grand solar minimum. And all these electromagnetic field changes that we're seeing are affecting the jet streams and cloud cells, the amount of UVB that's going to hit the planet. You know, this interconnection between the sun and the earth is never discussed. For thousands and thousands and thousands of years, we always looked at the sun. They worshipped it. They studied it. They had entire classes of people just to know what it was, the priest class. That's what they did. They studied the sun, ingested materials to allow them to jump into different dimensions to intermesh with our dimension. But one thing that was constant from prehistory, as long as you know, up until, what, 100 years ago, is they followed the sun. There was something so significant and so important with soul up there. Now, this is the only time in human history, you got to put, I'll say this is a huge statement, this is the only time in human history we have not followed the sun. Or maybe it was like that with the Mayans too, and we just get a different version of what Mayan history was, and maybe their general populace was just as non-observant as ours is. I don't know. It's just writing history. Is that too outlandish, Ransom, to think about that?
Not really. You know, one thing I think about, you know, you brought that up, and it sent my mind into a weird place, is the amount of solar cults that were around. And the fact that those cults are most likely still around in a different form, just kind of like you were just saying. And when you think about the Mayans, they only sacrificed like less than 1% or something. But that equated to about 175,000 people every year. So you think about in modern terms, what we're doing around the world, and it's almost like they are doing the same percentage of sacrificial deaths. It's just in a different way, so it looks different now. Instead of just cutting somebody on a big altar for the whole city to see, we're kind of, you know, like doing things like 9/11, or, you know, killing 1.9 million people in the Middle East when we invaded over there for weapons that didn't exist, or what we're doing right
now. Were those
weapons
of mass destruction? There were a lot of them.
You know what was so funny about that? I always laughed because everybody hammers George Bush and all of them about lying about weapons of mass destruction. But what they didn't notice is it was a misdirection, because there was no yellow cake uranium, but we did sell them smallpox, mustard gas, so all kinds of other things. So they did have weapons of mass destruction, just not the ones that they wanted people to talk about. So they were more than willing for you to talk about, you know, how they messed up and there was no weapons of mass destruction that they were talking about. But what no one talked about is the other stuff that we openly sold to them that were, you know, you love how it's just lying by omission. Oh, well, they got this and that over there. But we're doing the same thing right now, from Planned Parenthood to decreasing the amount of food people eat in certain places to just the war zone. And, you know, I'm not pro-Russian or pro-Ukrainian in any way. As far as like, I don't, it has nothing to do with us over here. However, I can see that it's not working out for the Ukrainian people. You might feel patriotic and have your little flag by your bio and your pronouns and all of that because you want to be part of the latest thing. But really realize what we're doing over there is a proxy war for NATO, where we're using another country and their population to die for us. And then convincing them that somehow, you know, they're doing something like over here. You keep hearing our politicians saying, well, it's for democracy. It's for democracy, for democracy. That's all they say. It's like a parrot thing. But how are people going to enjoy democracy if they're all dead, if they've been sacrificed for NATO and the UN? Because they're the only people really that are dealing with this. You know, we're sending over billions, but we're not the ones dying yet. But what happens when we run out of Ukrainians? Do we just pull and run like we have before, or do we double down and send Americans? Well, I can already answer that. We already have American troops on the ground there, and it's expanding rapidly. And eventually, China is going to take advantage of that. And ironically, I read an article the other day that was questioning the idea if Japan might go the other way. And this is also another prediction of mine from years ago, that Japan would eventually be forced into a position where not only South Korea, but Japan would be forced into a position where it's in their best interest to make a deal with the people closer in a geographic location than the people way over the Pacific, which means that they may switch sides out of necessity in the near future. And I think that may just be happening faster than people think.
It is indeed. It all comes down to who can eat and who has access to the food during this next phase. So these electromagnetic changes on the sun cannot be stopped. It is part of a natural cycle that is so much more vast than you could possibly even really fathom. And I look at a lot of images of the galaxies and the stars and the different galaxies within that and different celestial, whether these gas clouds are perceived, you know, novas, this sort of thing. But that's only what we're seeing in like one square inch of, you know, something that's 100 square miles. You know, to even fathom what a black hole is in the center, even if it exists, there's a center point of something, consciousness, that's holding that spiral that is hundreds of billions of stars in their flow of time, in space and time, third dimension, like energy transference. And these waves come and go. These waves are just built into like a heartbeat. Are you going to try to stop the heartbeat in your heart because it's moving? And, you know, I mean, it is what it is. It beats when it beats, and other things respond when they respond. It's no different than the sun changing its frequency right now. It's just part of it. Yes, it's a reset mechanism for what exists right now on our planet and the way our societies were set up, so with such fragility, or so fragile in a way that they're so easy to break. And everything was just in time until this last second. We already see the degradation of just-in-time delivery. It's not working right now. In the fashion, that's why things cost so much more. That's why things are delayed and they're not available or canceled orders. It runs the gamut. And that's the whole thing, is none of these systems are being rebuilt right now. So for me, the trajectory is they know it's going to be some sort of incredible disruption to the daily workings of our planet here. For a couple of years, hard, like starting now, through 2024, October 23rd is the actual date that the four gas giants perceived from Earth will line up in a square in the outer solar system. Now, the Earth's going to pass through the sun's magnetic field and also those four interplaying. Okay, that's on the toroid field type of idea. But somebody said in my mind, what about gravity? I was thinking, all right, explained. Okay, we have the moon that affects the tides. What if just those four gas giants in the outer solar system become another lunar-esque gravitational force for a certain amount of time, and our planet actually passes through two moons affecting the tides, equivalent, based on the second gravitational magnetic field in the outer solar system? Like just coastal. Imagine if the tides tripled or a 5X just for two or three days in and out of the cycle. For 6 or 8 days, you just get tides that are 3, 5, 10 times higher than the normal. Every tide comes in for 10 days, 10 times above the normal. Like, what would that do to our society, our civilization? And heaven forbid what would happen with the tectonic plates. We're going to swing through that in about a year and a half from now. So the amplification of changes you see geopolitically and in the news and the media, like everything is on this same timeline. That's why they seem rushed, because they are. See, the unknown is when we pass through that. And Ransom, that's the other photo I sent you there. That was what the toroid field overlapped into that block wall looks like. I had it in the wrong orientation. I was shocked. I can't believe I had it in the wrong orientation. That center overlapping wall is not a vertical wall. It's a horizontal wall inside the block wall. So when we go through it, it should go through somewhere. If you think of the Earth as just straight up and down through the equator, but since we're tilted off, it's going to roll through the center of the planet. And it's going to be interesting, because part of it will be at 0 degree, but by the time that block wall passes through, whatever it is, seconds, minutes, or whatever, by the time we come through from one edge of the planet to the other edge of the planet, it'll go from, what, 0 degrees up to 21 degrees? From the equator to 21 north, it'll, like, get this like, wedge of consciousness, something this strange going through this block wall. I thought it was going to be the whole planet from top to bottom, stem to stern, but it's not. It's a vertical plane. Not a horizontal plane. I can't believe it. The difference in that change in magnetism and the effect it'll have on the planet or not. Now be the elite and try to bring people through this. See, your challenge also is to stay in power. And your challenge is also to control the finance when it finishes, because you already understand the old money's not going to survive the change. It's old, dense, whatever it is. There'll be a lot of earth change, a lot of just things will be different. If you can't value things property-wise, because every single coast of every single continent got wiped out by 10x bigger tides, then that's a complete write-off. Like, nothing has value at that point. You need to start over, completely over. And this is where it brings us back into these cycles determine the rise of civilization and the fall of civilization. And where we sit now, I don't know. I totally have some good ideas on how the rest of the media cycle is going to work to distract as we get into the amplification phase here starting now. This whole ozone thing is really going to break open here soon. I mean, in terms of newsworthiness and news traction. If they're going with record hot temperatures when it's not record hot temperatures and trying to put red hot maps out to make you believe it's hotter just because they put a color. And that's the thing that I actually did a course on color psychology to understand about graphics, putting, you know, thumbnails in and adding like headers on newsletters, which Ransom and I are going to start here. Oh, by the way, note to self, I'm sorry I've been slow on the ball. Ransom and I are getting a landing page together here. So if you want to get our show notes, you can put your email in, and I will have that ready next week. So if you want to join us, get the show notes. Maybe you're a little busy to, you know, to try to understand what we said. We're going to try to put it in a one-pager, maybe just bullet notes of what the biggest points we talked about, maybe some subcontext or something. But anyway, I'll try to get that landing page completely finished. I started on it with some graphics, but I never got the sign-up box integrated there with my MailChimp. My bad. Slow on that one. But Ransom and I will put this out if you feel like joining us and you don't want to get the show notes, please, we'll send them to you after that. But the world we enter, Ransom, seems like it's expendable. It's gone. It's already been written off. Let's start with a new one. So what do you think? Where does it go first is the question.
I just kind of wanted to throw a little weird idea out there, a kind of a question hypothesis at the same time. A long time ago, we know that all the ancient people were wearing red ochre. And the more I, look into, you know what red ochre is. It's basically just iron molecules. But what I found out is that they're the perfect sunblock. Not only are they the perfect sunblock, but they also treat sunburn. It also treats sunburn and it's healthy for the body. But on top of that, there is some weird phenomenon. And I've been doing a lot of research on humans and their ability to detect the magnetic field in true north. Now, guess what those red ochre molecules did at the time? When they smeared them around their body, the paint would align with true north. So in other words, there was a thin, magnetic film on a human being body that would make you more sensitive to the magnetic field. Now, think about those three things. It blocks you from getting sunburn. It enhances possibly your ability to detect the magnetic field and which way the field is going, maybe even allowing you to be protected at some time. But then also, being like a vitamin that is absorbed to the skin and also treats burns. So in the near future, you never know. You might have to look back into why did they cover themselves with red ochre? Was it just for paint or did it have another reason? Because I don't think it was just for paint. And think about this. They also covered the dead in it. A lot of different people from the red paint people in the Americas to several European and other people back into antiquity did this thing with red ochre. And some tribes in Africa and South America and the Amazon still use a form of that. And just think about the idea of that. They knew something about that specific substance and went all the way to the point of smearing it all over the skin. And that wasn't just in primitive cultures, but all the way like the Minoan cultures and different people like that in the Mediterranean that were portrayed as very fair people. The men who went outside all the time were portrayed as red because they were covered in red ochre and also getting tan. So I know that was a lot to cram in the last couple of minutes, but what do you think about that hypothesis that the people of ancient times knew various different reasons to actually smear iron all over their skin at certain times, including times where the magnetic field was collapsing? And it makes me wonder if that's part of why Cro-Magnon man outlasted some of the other human species like Neanderthal, Denisovan, etc.
Yeah, because you think about it too, first derogatory statements toward first peoples or original peoples was redskins. Right, so it goes right in there. That would be, Central Plains, anything in Canada, Florida, Blackfeet. It doesn't really matter. Cherokee here. But they also, at that time, considered any of those of the indigenous peoples as redskins. So that matches perfectly with the red ochre. It must have been a global phenomenon where everybody knew that through high radiation events, if you smeared this on your skin, you could still go outdoor, like wearing heavier clothing or something. But then you wouldn't need the manufacture of clothing if you just had this and you were working with natural materials and living in tune with the environment. It could manifest by just thinking, blending molecules, rearranging atoms through thought, just harmonic frequencies. That's it. Thank you, Ransom Godwin, tonight. David Devine signing off, Revolution Radio. Studio A. Ready, I see it. Conversations. Bye. Revolution. See you later.
What the heck is the Truth Jihad? Hey, I'm Kevin Barrett, host of Truth Jihad Radio. Federal prosecutors, Department of Homeland Security agents, and curious passersby often ask me, just what is this Truth Jihad thing anyway? Well, everybody knows what truth is, but jihad is a misunderstood term. Jihad means effort or struggle. The greater jihad is the struggle to be a better person, while the lesser jihad is the struggle to defend the community. Prophet Muhammad, peace upon him, did say that the best jihad is a word of truth flung in the face of a tyrant. And that's what we do here at Truth Jihad Radio. Every Friday, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, 5 to 7 Pacific, right here on Revolution Radio.
Are you interested in the paranormal? Murder mystery? Real natural law? Do you enjoy interviews with amazing guests? Then join Crypt Rick every Monday night, 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on Revolution Radio. Studio A, freedomslips.com. Crypt Rick's Ivan, thank you. Welcome to the Crypt.
Hey everyone, it's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Thank you for tuning in to